Hello and welcome to another episode of LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and I'm joined today by a special guest, Johnny Moe. Johnny is a experienced momentum and swing trader, and we talk a good bit about trading and other stuff in Telegram, and I really respect a lot of the stuff that Johnny does and his ability to capture these momentum and breakout trades. So he agreed to join me on the podcast today and talk about the way he approaches trading. So hey, Johnny, how's it going?
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me. Good to finally talk with you in person after all the IMs we've exchanged.
Yeah, seriously, it's always fun to talk with somebody over voice after you've talked with them for months via text. So today we are going to cover the news of the week and all that kind of stuff a little bit, but then we'll dig into this primary topic of how you approach trading, because it's pretty different compared to a lot of people that are in crypto, which I've really found interesting. So why don't we get started before we even get into the news and just tell us a little bit about how you even got into this ecosystem and how you came to approach trading the way that you do.
Sure. So I started out trading equities, and I've always been what people consider a momentum trader. A lot of times you'll hear it called MOMO trading for short, sometimes breakout trading. The general idea is that you're looking for high volatility, high volume, momentum-based trades. So something that's moving very quickly. You catch it, ride it, and get off fast. And this works out really well in equities. It always doesn't work out so well in crypto. I've had to adjust my style a lot between equities and crypto. There was a little bit of a learning curve adjusting to crypto as a result, but pretty successfully, you know, over the period of weeks or months, was able to adapt it. I've probably turned into a little bit more of a swing trader than I ever was before. When I used to trade equities, I would cringe at the thought of leaving a position open overnight for multiple days. That's now pretty typical. You and I have talked before. It still makes me cringe a little bit sometimes holding an altcoin trade overnight. But it's definitely an adaptation of what is a pure MOMO or momentum style from equities.
So when you were doing equities, what kind of trade length would be normal? Like 5 minutes or 5 hours, or does it just depend?
Yeah, anywhere from seconds to minutes to hours. You know, generally equity, the thing about equities is you've got an open and a close on the trading day. So there's sort of forced volatility when that market open happens. 9:30 a.m. Eastern time, market opens, and there's rapid volatility all over the place as a result. So you can really take advantage of that volatility, and that, you know, right at market open at 9:30 a.m., that's when you are probably only going to be in trades for potentially seconds or minutes at a time. And we're talking about, you know, multi-thousand share positions, so that if there's a 10 cent swing or a $1 swing, you're taking advantage of your significantly large position on that swing. When we start getting into trades that you're leaving open for more than an hour, that's probably more in the afternoon time in equities trading, between 12 p.m. and the close. Volume and volatility significantly declines after 12 p.m. And as a result, you may need to...
Does that go all the way into the close, or is it just afternoon in general?
Afternoon in general. I mean, general, you know, 9:30 to 11 a.m. is really when you see most of the volatility. 12 p.m. to close, it tails off, you know, pretty extreme. A lot of people that trade momentum trading won't even trade after noon. Noon hits and they're done for the day. And I've definitely done that before myself.
Cool. So how did you transition from there to crypto then?
Yeah, so I also have a day job. Luckily, it allows me to work from home most of the time, and that's how I'm able to trade and both have a day job. And that day job is in the technology sector, and blockchain was all a buzz in my job in 2016. So, you know, I started out just figuring out, hey, what's this blockchain thing everyone keeps talking about? Obviously, that led me to Bitcoin. This was around August, September of 2016 that I really started to take a deeper dive into it. You know, by November, I had made the plunge and bought my first Bitcoin. And by January, I had made January of 2017, I had made the full transition from trading equities, completely halted it, moved all my trading capital over to crypto, and have been full crypto ever since.
Okay, so you didn't do like half and half or anything like that. You just went straight in. Basically, once you got comfortable, you moved all your capital. Was it the volatility that brought you to it, or is it just easier to trade crypto than equities ever was?
It is unbelievably easier. Anyone who is, you know, who's been doing extremely well trading crypto, and once the quote unquote bubble finally bursts and they're ready to dive into equities or Forex or whatever it may be, you know, I would caution them, don't get too overconfident. It is very different. It is a much different game. You've got very large institutional traders running high frequency trading algorithms, and very experienced retail traders as well, who've been doing this for years or even decades. So crypto is incredibly easier, and the returns are impossible to ignore. Absolutely unreal returns.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you ever talk about FIB extensions for potential gains at 3.618 or beyond?
Yeah. Yeah. Not likely.
Yeah. So, so you've been in for over a year now, and what have you noticed in terms of how the trading has changed from a crypto perspective? Like, does it feel significantly different trading crypto now than it did in, say, January 2017?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is the difference in liquidity. The liquidity has improved immensely over the last year to, 14 months or so that I've been trading crypto. Especially with my trading style, a momentum or breakout trading style requires large volume. And if that large volume doesn't exist, you're not going to get the momentum pushes that you would like to see. The other thing is a momentum trading style requires very large positions. If you want to be able to get in and out of a large position quickly, there has to be that order book liquidity in order for you to be able to close those positions without significant slippage.
Yeah, so when you get into a momentum trade, like, it may not be worth it for you to put like 5% of your trading stack in the trade, because you're looking for a quick in and out. So you want to be able to put much more, potentially, depending on the market conditions, right? So like, you might put 30 or 40% or more of everything you have into a single trade, right?
Absolutely, right. And I know this goes against everything that a lot of people are taught when it comes to sound investing and buy and hold investing, that you don't put all your eggs in one basket. My trading style almost necessitates it sometimes. It depends on the setup, the opportunity, the news that's behind it. But certain circumstances, you know, two that immediately come to mind that have come up recently were the Bitcoin Cash, that huge run that it had a month or two back. I was in the midst of that. I was probably 90% in Bitcoin Cash at one point in time before I got out at the very top. And Ripple, the rippling recently. Again, I was probably 90% in Ripple in the meat of that momentum.
Yeah, so we should establish you are a chart trader. Like, you and I have talked about this. I apply a fundamental basis to what I like to trade. That's partially because of my strategy. You know, I hold a lot longer, like sometimes for months. And because of your strategy, like, as long as it meets a chart pattern that you're looking at or a setup that you're looking at, and it has the volume profile, it's on the exchange that you are willing to keep your money, you don't care what the coin is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not investing. I'm not mirroring these coins. You know, I'm looking at what the chart provides and taking advantage of it.
Yeah, so when you say you're like 90% in Bitcoin Cash, that's not because you believe in Bitcoin Cash or you believe in Ripple. You purely see those as quick opportunities to increase your Bitcoin.
Absolutely. I think the fundamentals on both of those are pretty god-awful. I would not invest long-term in either of these. But from the perspective of watching the chart and you see these huge volume pushes coming in, I can't help but take advantage of those.
Yeah. So I want to get into some of the charts and stuff in a minute, and we'll talk about how you set up some of these trades and how you seek them out, how you set stops, all sorts of stuff like that. Before we do, there's a couple things worth talking about that have gone on this week. And I know you don't get into the fundamentals too much, but I am curious your perspective with your type of trading, like how you may approach a news-based event. So, because I assume that can be a big part for a momentum trade, right?
Yeah, part of momentum trading is news. It's that simple, especially in crypto, because you don't have that market open that gives you forced volatility. One of the only items that does give you forced volatility are news events. So when those news events occur, you've got to be ready to jump all over them.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one. Actually, I think it would be a good news item to discuss. Bitfinex had a mass listing this week. They added BAT, the basic attention token, ZRX, Project ZeroX, FUN, which is a gaming token, MANA, which is a decentralized land thing, Spank, which is like some kind of adult website token, and TNB, which I have no idea what it is. So they added all these on January 8th, and I know that you were playing trades on some of these. So I guess you don't have to trade these on Bitfinex to have taken advantage. So you were trading these coins on your exchanges of choice, right? So when you heard this news was coming, or you heard that it was out, how do you approach a situation like that?
BAT was the big one for me in this case. I already had a BAT position open, and that was more of a swing position. I was riding it over multiple days, just watching it follow the ascending trend line that it was on. So part of that position was just luck that I already had a BAT position open. But when I found out about the BAT news, I about quadrupled my position based on that news. You and I were talking about this, and I think you were laughing when I told you what size of a BAT position I had at that point in time. So
yeah,
I was actually looking for one more leg than it had. So we didn't get that final leg that I was hoping for. But when these news items come out, if you can get them early enough, then I would never hesitate to put a substantial position on that coin. I think where people get themselves in a lot of trouble, though, is if you miss the news or you miss the leg, don't chase it. You're going to get yourself in trouble if you chase these things at the top, and now you're the person that just bought the top and you just turned yourself into a bag holder. But if you can get the news early enough, right, I would not hesitate to jump in with a heavy position.
Yeah, so Bitfinex adding that many tokens at once was definitely significant news, especially because I think not a lot of people would have expected some of the stuff that they listed. So it caused a lot of volume and new volatility that day. And I'm sure there are probably some long-term effects for that, like in terms of people analyzing those particular tokens, people looking at longer-term trades. That's advantageous to have such a large exchange with really not a whole lot of coins being supportive of those tokens. So that was fundamentally good news for all those tokens. But I've got the chart pulled up here, and for people that are watching this on YouTube, they can kind of take a look at what we were seeing. So I've actually been in a BAT position for a long time that was then well underwater as it tanked in October. I played a breakout trade from September, I think, and I was doing okay on BAT, and then I woke up one day and it just died on me. And I've failed to cut my losses on several coins in the fall, which hurt me. But that kind of led into this pattern that we've got now on BAT, where it's got this major downtrend and then absolute bottom that was probably an 80% drawdown. And since then, it's been on a month and a half or so massive upswing. So when you look at a trade like this, at what point does this look good to you? Or is a daily time frame like not even appropriate for how you would approach it?
No, I absolutely use the daily time frame and the, you know, the 12-hour, the 4-hour, the 6-hour, all those high time frames to identify setups. And, you know, you were just showing the bat daily Ichimoku, and we did have that daily Kumo breakout. And if I recall correctly, that was the reason I had entered my bat swing position in the first place. And I was just lucky that that was timed really nicely with the Bitfinex news.
Yeah, so it broke actually the cloud, and it broke the 200 daily moving average at the same time, like basically the same day, at least with a close. And then it came back and retested that. So when you catch a Kumo breakout like that, are you looking for the retest, or will you enter it as soon as it breaks? Because looking at BAT, I mean, it broke five times before that with what ended up being daily wicks that didn't work out. So were you in the trade for that period of time, or are you looking for a daily close when you get into something
like that?
I think
the close is really important on these Kumo breakouts. You'll see this a lot where it wicks outside of the cloud and then comes back down and mm-hmm. closes back inside the cloud. So that close is really important. On the daily, that can sometimes hurt your entry a little bit, right? Because a lot can change in 24 hours.
Yeah, because you can get a 20 or 25% swing on the difference between the breakout and
right.
the close.
Sometimes you can get close to the daily close, you know, if we're 6 or 8 hours away from the daily close, but it's at a point where it would take a drastic crash for us to get back inside the cloud. Sometimes you can make decisions at that point. Mm-hmm. But I do think that close is important on the Kumo breakouts. And sometimes you can go down to the 4-hour and the 1-hour Kumos to give you a better idea instead of having to wait for the daily close.
Yeah, of whether or not it's got potential to maintain the trend, basically, right?
And then you were asking about the retest. I do like to wait for the retest, particularly when you get those flat Kumo tops. I think, you know, taking an initial position based on the breakout, absolutely, go for it. I generally do it. But then I would like to add to the position on a retest if we get it.
Did you ever use something like the Ichimoku system before you got into crypto, or did you just start using it because crypto people are using it and sometimes using the indicators the rest of the community is using?
I actually learned Ichimoku as a result of crypto and your co-host, Josh.
He's kind of the Ichimoku king for crypto.
Right. He turned me onto it. I don't think it does that great of a job on low time frames. And when I was trading equities, my time frames were generally 1 minute and 5 minute candles. So I'm generally not going to be using Ichimoku on 1 minute, 5 minute candles. I've expanded my time frame significantly since getting into crypto. You know, like we talked about, you don't get that forced market open liquidity that allows you to take advantage of 5 minute candles, or excuse me, volatility. So as a result of expanding my time frame, that's also, you also need to expand your technical analysis tools, and Ichimoku's been one of them.
Yeah, I've kind of got the gamut open here on my computer screen where I'm showing 50, 100, and 200 moving averages on top of the Ichimoku system. Are there tools that you prefer personally? Or are you a pure kind of formation type of person where you're looking for a particular trading pattern?
I am a huge pattern trader. I like patterns. I like, you know, it's extremely basic. Sometimes I think people almost overcomplicate it a little bit too much. It's very easy to identify triangles and wedges and play them accordingly. Volume is huge for me. You know, you and I talk about this a lot. If the volume is not there, then I many times will not take the trade. If the volume peaking is usually a sign for me to exit once we start getting to unsustainable volume levels, that's a sign for me to exit. So patterns, volumes are the biggest ones for me. I do also like stochastic RSI on the low time frames and regular RSI on the very high time frames. But those are more to identify setups and time entries than it is to actually play a breakout.
When you're monitoring something like volume, do you just use default TradingView or other like CoinEgee or whatever volume bars, or do you use other tools to help kind of capture those spikes?
Just typical volume. Again, keeping it basic, volume and patterns. I know you've got up on your screen right now, you've been using this volume oscillator, the leap volume trend, right, recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I kind of like it because it kind of gives me this idea of momentum combined with volume. And I'm stacking it right now on top of the Stoke RSI. And actually, the way they align is really interesting. So like when your Stoke would be oversold or whatever, the volume indicator really dips down. And when it's got these big surges, you can see those very similarly. So like these being red or green are kind of indicative. And when they flip off the horizontal, off the 50% or whatever that is, it's kind of indicative of a Stoke crossover between the two lines that appear on that. So that's something I've been enjoying recently, and it helps me visualize it a little better. Because if I just look at regular volume, I don't know, for some reason I have a hard time really digging into what that means. Maybe on lower time frames, like you can see the bigger spikes if you're on an hourly or something, but for the higher time frames, it kind of all looks the same to me. So I've been using, it's called the 1337 volume trend, and it's been really nice for me. It's also called, like, I think it's pump doctor trends within TradingView. I learned that one from Crypto Messiah, actually.
So I heard you say 1337. Did you ever were you ever a gamer, a PC gamer, at any point in your life?
No, I'm not. So I don't know what it means at all.
1337 is Haxor speak for Leet, which is short for elite. That got started way back when. I don't even know. I was a PC gamer in the early 2000s, and people talked about Leet back then. So there's your gaming education moment for the day.
Yeah, I'm like the opposite of a gamer, so I have no idea. The other news of the week, which is more recent, is Korea banning Bitcoin and then pretty quickly not banning Bitcoin. However, overnight, and for the recording, people may not be seeing this as real time as we are, but from our time of recording, this occurred today, basically. Like, so I think the news came out late last night on January 10th, and then we've kind of been seeing the effects of this throughout January 11th. And I have this chart that I like to use, which is a multi-week, at least, kind of double ascending triangle pitchfork thing for Bitcoin. And this, I call it my guiding light. And the Korean news actually caused Bitcoin to drop down a layer of the pitchfork. You use pitchforks, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know if you've been using this pitchfork for Bitcoin yourself, but Korea created some FUD for us, and we had a recovery from it initially, but it looks like the market may have decided to use it as its reason to have a correction. So when you hear about news like this, I guess, one, how does it affect, what do you think of it in general? And then number two is, how does it affect your open positions?
Yeah, so news like this generally is prime for momentum trading. We want volatility. News events like this cause volatility. In this case, I did not make any money on this trade. I initially sold a pretty heavy Bitcoin position through GDAX and rebought it on a mental stop at break even. So I didn't get in at a point that I was able to make any money. It also did not, well, we did have some big red candles. It did not have the significant crushing power that we would normally see from news like this. When you compare it to the China ban news, this was almost nothing. And I think two things go into that. One is we were already significantly oversold. So, you know, looking at your pitchfork and the triangle that you're drawing, there wasn't a whole lot of room to the downside for us to get to.
Without creating some major bear scenarios.
Right, exactly. And
we were already in the zone where people were probably looking to buy anyway.
Right. And the second thing is, I think this is a bullish sign overall. If this did send us into a more significant downtrend, who knows where the bottom would have been. But the fact that we stopped right where we did, right on kind of the prior support levels, makes me a little bit more macro bullish.
Yeah, so Korea is significant right now in crypto. Like, I don't know how many people know this, but they should. But like, Korea is responsible for some enormous percentage of overall volume in crypto. So them coming out with news is probably second in significance, or some would say maybe more significant than the US coming out with news in terms of regulatory behavior, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was so big, CoinMarketCap had to remove them, right?
Yeah, because they're like highly inflated in terms of all crypto pricing. Like, I don't even know what Bitcoin was there, but like when it was say 19,000 in most markets, it was like 23,000 in Korea. So they're at a significant premium in terms of trading price. And I guess that initiated some of this dump. Like the first red candle was probably because of these changes instigated by CoinMarketCap, where they were just suddenly saying like, okay, we're taking them out. So Korea just left and all the prices dumped on CoinMarketCap, even though really nothing had changed. It was just the way they make their index.
Right. And I'm a firm believer of overbought markets technically will correct. It's just a matter of time. Generally, a news catalyst is the major catalyst to cause an overbought market to correct. But if you stick around an overbought market for too long, it will likely come out to bite you at some point. So no, I think what you just gave is a great example. No matter how small the news catalyst may be, in this case, even CoinMarketCap removing South Korea caused some big red candles.
Yeah, so you were in some alt positions when this happened. I was too. Somebody like me, I'm in positions for much longer. I'm basically just sitting on my hands doing nothing. I probably have much looser stops on a position than a momentum trader would have. So, how does this type of thing, like Bitcoin doing Bitcoin things, how does that affect what you do as a momentum trader?
So I think, to give everybody some background here, when you look out on crypto Twitter, you see a lot of chants of HODL, and if you ever sell any altcoin, then you've got weak hands, and all sorts of stuff like that. My background as a momentum trader pretty much guarantees that I probably have some of the weakest hands in crypto. I have no problem hitting the sell button and trying to rebuy lower. I sell very often and try to rebuy lower very often. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You're not going to win every trade. But so when events like this do occur, I always try to look at options to sell altcoin positions, whether it's a full or a partial. It may just be a small partial, and rebuy lower. And I know that'll be completely chastised on crypto Twitter. But that's my trading style.
Yeah, but you're just approaching things significantly differently. So, you could be, say you're playing, I think we both bought Omise Go, or OMG, is the ticker, and there was a breakout trade on that. So like, how would you, I don't know that this one broke down because of the Korea news, or if it just broke down because it failed. But like, how would you, let's say this broke down out of a pennant that it was forming because of the news. Would you create a stop like really close to the initial pennant so that if your idea fails, then you're just out of the trade and you're done? Or do you create it a little looser and give yourself a chance to stay in the trade a little longer?
Yeah, so one of the whole reasons I like patterns so much is they give you great risk reward on a potential stop. So, you buy the pattern breakout and your stop is just underneath the pattern breakout. So very often we see a breakout and then a retest of the pattern. You don't want to get stopped out on the retest of the pattern. But if we come back for a retest of the pattern and then fall below the pattern, I will have a stop there and I will be stopped out. So sometimes it'll be a fake out, right? You'll get stopped out and then the trade will continue on. That sucks when it happens, but it happens. It's a part of trading. Probably some of the weakest hands in crypto. Tight stops. Generally, they're going to be mental stops just because of the illiquid markets that we're working with. It's very easy for one large position to be sold and their wick will hit your stop. So it's generally a mental stop. I'll have an alert set. That alert triggers. I get a text message on my cell phone, run to my computer if I'm not already there, see what's going on, and make a decision on whether that was just a wick or if this is a true invalidation of the pattern. And if so, I will sell.
So you have to essentially be very cognizant of your open trade and be able to make an adjustment within minutes. So this is part. This goes back to why you don't like to go to sleep with your positions open, right?
Right. Exactly. You know, when we've got, whether you want to call this an alt season or a mini alt season or an alt holiday or whatever this is.
The words. I feel like these words are cursed. If you use them, it'll all go away. All the fun from the last month.
Whatever you want to call what we've had for the last month, you almost have to leave them in open overnight because so much will happen if you try to close them. But as much as possible, I prefer not to go to sleep with positions open. Though, you know, there's no worse feeling than having a huge position and then waking up in the morning to it being down 20% or something like that. So as much as possible, I try not to. Another big piece of this is that, you know, I know a lot of people like to have 30 altcoin positions at one time. I hate it. I don't try to catch every altcoin run. I know I will not catch every altcoin that starts running. I like to have less than 10, ideally less than 5, maybe 2 to 4 open positions at one time that I can monitor very closely. And because I only have 2 to 4 open, they'll be substantially larger positions than somebody would take if they've got 30 open positions.
Yeah, I know you recently had 8 or 10 open, and that was very unlike you. And I'm curious, when you have to react so quickly. So I have more positions open, especially in a time like this, where I'm more confident in alts being able to gain value relative to Bitcoin. But even I'm looking to consolidate now that we've been in this for like a month or more. Like, it's getting nearer and nearer to the time where I feel like Bitcoin is just going to rampage, you know, and I want to be able to react quickly. For you, when you're looking at these lower time frames, is there anything else special that you do to like manage your risk on that scenario? Because when you're putting 20-30% of your capital on a position like that, how do you protect that basically?
Yeah, it's all how comfortable I feel with the current kind of macro market behavior. So recently, I think I peaked at 11 or 12 open positions at once. I was joking with you, you know, that I didn't even realize how many I had open because Bittrex defaults to 10, you know, displaying 10, and I had to...
Yeah, you'd never gotten to the second page
I had to move to the second page to realize I had more than 10. That's where I don't want to be, right, is not realizing that I have a position open. That's one of the reasons I don't like to have many positions open. But I felt really good, right? We were really bullish. We were in a sustained kind of bull market from a macro perspective on, you know, looking at daily candles with altcoins. So I got a little bit more aggressive or loose than I typically would. But as we, you know, you can almost feel altcoins starting to lose momentum over the last few days. I've reeled that way back. I've closed a majority of my positions and I'm back to just 2 to 4 altcoin positions at a time.
And when you say you're in or not in a position, will you generally, at least when... maybe right now is a little tough, but will you generally be in Bitcoin at least, or are you often, are you ending the trading session straight in fiat?
I think that's a great question. We talked about how I had to adapt my trading style moving from equities to crypto. When you're trading equities, you get in, you get out, you're back to fiat, right? You're back to US dollars, you close your trade. I started out trying to do that. I just took a direct equities trading style and moved it over to crypto. When I first started, I was only on GDAX. So this was just Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. And I quickly realized that this market is way too bull, to try and do that. You're going to miss a lot by constantly closing your positions back into fiat. So as a result of adapting my trading style, I'm pretty much always in Bitcoin now, right? We're just using altcoins to acquire more Bitcoin is the name of the game. But there are occasions like we just talked about last night where there was the South Korea news that came out where I will try to sell Bitcoin into fiat and catch some of those dips.
Yeah, lower your price on Bitcoin in a short term trade. But you're keeping your overall capital in Bitcoin right now because you feel like it's generally bullish. Like it hasn't shown signs of true bearishness yet. So therefore you're willing to keep it in and ride that train. And then use smaller term trades to increase your Bitcoin.
Right.
So I want to go to, I've had Ripple on my screen here for a minute. I know you have been playing Ripple a good bit. People hate Ripple. But I feel like the whole world was watching this move that Ripple made from mid-December all the way really until just maybe a week ago when it kind of peaked over 22K Satoshi, which is incredible. That was a enormous move, like more than a 10x move from the bottom. How do you address a trade like this? Because this is one I know you went to bed with. But something like this can have significant drawdowns. Are you trying to sell as soon as it hits a red candle on like say a 1 hour or 4 hour time frame? Or are you willing to let one of these ride?
So I think two big things for me on this Ripple trade. One is you generally always see 3 to 4 legs on a big bull run or even a bear, a big bear run, right? 3 to 4 legs. Buying the third pullback is always risky because you never know if it's going to get that fourth leg. But generally, if you buy the pullback on the first or second leg, you're usually pretty safe. And so you'll see on this Ripple chart right here, we had 4 really clearly defined legs. So to me, this was a pretty easy trade. These legs are very defined. Whether you got in on the first leg or the second leg, I hope you at least caught that third leg. I sold a pretty substantial amount of my position on this third leg. I got very little out of this fourth leg, just because it had run so far, the risk reward versus catching that fourth leg versus the chance that it just continues downward from there was not worth it to me. But that's pretty much what I'm looking for. The other thing is volume, right? This had huge, huge volume, huge news that kept driving the volume. So it was pretty easy pattern, pretty easy volume. These are basic things, but that's all you need.
Yeah. So Ripple's an interesting one for me because I feel like we've always had a lot of coins that were bullish over this past month and a half. I waited on Ripple for freaking months, you know, like I was ready for this move. But basically I caught like one leg because, I lost my patience on the consolidation after the first leg. And then I missed the second leg because I moved capital out during the correction that it had after leg one. So I essentially like made a small profit off my initial buy, like really for holding as long as I did not take advantage of this Ripple trade very well. So when you're looking at say a 3 drives type of thing like this or 4 leg, whatever you want to call it, how are you shifting between like say trading Ripple versus moving that out to something else, but staying prepared to catch the next leg? Is that something you're actively trying to manage in your trading style?
Yeah. Typically I've got, you know, at least some capital sitting in Bitcoin waiting to take advantage of a new trade. In the case that I decide that's not enough capital, and this is exactly what happened with this Ripple move, in the case that it happens that I decide I don't have enough, I'll just sell everything else. I have no attachment to these bags. The trading fees in crypto are pretty extreme, so that kind of sucks sometimes. That, you know, when I calculate what I've spent on fees in the last year, it makes me want to cry. But that's just part of the game. So in this, you know, for me, I think it was the third leg. It was on the 26th of December, right? Because it was on, I remember it was the day after Christmas, I think, the 26th or 27th, where we broke to a new high. And so I just looked at the chart. Okay, we've had two legs. We just broke to a new high. Volume is increasing. Here we go. This is it. This is the third leg. This is going to be huge. And I went about 90% into Ripple. And it's probably one of the biggest trades I've ever had in crypto as a result.
Yeah. So when you say a new high, you mean it passed the high of the previous leg. So like it went beyond the consolidation
right
zone.
Exactly.
Right?
So we hit a high on the second leg.
So really that was the second or even the third daily candle of off the low of the consolidation, but you don't care about that. Like, as soon as it breaks the prior leg's high, you are saying, okay, well, there's plenty of room here.
Right.
So that's when you caught the next, whatever it was, maybe 2.5 days of that momentum. Are you looking further back than that? Like, this is a multi-drive run here, but then of course there's the Ripple all-time high from May and June. Is that playing into your thinking when you're looking at targets for this kind of move, like for how high the third leg might go, for instance?
Yeah, in general, you know, I'm probably a little more macro bearish on altcoins than most people are, right? We've talked about this a lot, that I'm pretty skeptical about most of these, and I'm skeptical that anything will hit its all-time high against Bitcoin, or beat its all-time high against Bitcoin.
Because versus the dollar, that's like 15, 20
right.
times
so it's,
what its price it's, was in
right,
the past.
Right, it's nearly impossible to me that Bitcoin can hit the targets that people think it's going to hit, and altcoins will hit these targets against Bitcoin that they had in the past. And I also see a lot of this driven by the Ethereum and ICO mania that we had in 2017, and I don't know if we'll get something like that mania again. So absolutely, the Ripple prior all-time high was something I was considering. I didn't think we were even going to get this close to it as we did.
It got very
right.
close.
I think I sold my final sell on my position was in the 16,000 Satoshi range. So I definitely did not catch the very top at all. But I'm happy.
But you're within 10-20%. Yeah. And when you do that, are you just moving your stop up, or mentally moving your stop up, and you're going to sell as it draws down? Or are you letting it hit the target and saying, bam, I'm out?
Yeah, I'm watching for volume. I'm continuing to move my stops up. Every time we do a high, low, high, you can move your stop up to that prior low. So, you know, we hit a high, there's a pullback that is a low, that should be a higher low, right? It should not be as low as the prior low. And then we move higher again. You set your stop at that higher low, and you can keep pulling that up as you go. If we ever do make a new low, depending on whatever time frame candles you're using, that should stop you out. Another thing to look at is volume. Volume is king, in my opinion. Generally, peaks occur at a volume peak. So if you see this massive volume peak and it's unsustainable for volume to continue increasing even further, then that's a pretty good sign that we're either at the top or very close to a top, and you can close your position.
And then how long will you monitor? Like, Ripple right now is a great example. Like, this made a lower high, and now it on news today, it's looking like it's making yet again a lower high. Are you looking at this and saying, okay, this is definitely kind of the end of the road for this Ripple run, and I'm out for a while? Or are you looking at this to be able to make new, maybe scalp-based trades, like the kind of strong but lower high type of momentum-based trades? Or how are you looking at that?
Yeah, pretty much when I saw Ripple make this fourth leg, and you know, which was just stupid returns compared to where it started in a very limited amount of time. You know, my position was, okay, there's the fourth leg, this is done for a while, and I was not planning to touch Ripple for a good amount of time. We did get the news this morning, right, on MoneyGram. So I was luckily got a notification from Crypto Nike that that MoneyGram news had just come out, and we caught it minutes after it came out. So I was able to jump into a pretty big position right then, and didn't get a huge return out of it, but it was enough, and my position was big enough that made some pretty decent profit on
still
it.
Significant.
And it's a news-based trade. You get in on the news, wait for the volume to die out, and then get out.
Nice. And You've talked almost exclusively about being long on these positions. Do you ever look at something in terms of shorting potential?
Yeah, I think that's probably something I forgot to mention when you were talking about earlier in the podcast about difference between equities and crypto. Unless you are, quote unquote, paper trading on BitMEX, if you're a U.S. citizen, then it's really difficult to near impossible to short crypto. So it kind of almost gives you this extreme bullish bias that's really hard to beat sometimes, to mentally beat, where in equities, you can generally go long or go short. So I think you have more of a neutral position. You don't really care which direction it goes because you can take advantage of either one. In crypto, you're really stuck only going long. So you kind of almost are rooting for a bullish scenario sometimes. And I think people need to be careful of that. And most of the time, you're probably fine, right? Because this is the most extreme bull market we've ever seen. But if that changes, people need to make sure that they don't get caught.
Yeah, at some point, it's no longer that, right? So how are you preparing? Because you've been in for over a year. These were some of the most bullish times for Bitcoin. You've obviously caught significant altcoin runs where you've been able to increase your Bitcoin. How are you looking at protecting that capital in a macro sense?
Yeah, so from a mental perspective, I'm always trying to be critical and try to take the opposite view of whatever my position is. So if I've got a bullish position, I'm trying to think bearish. And maybe this goes back to how I've probably got some of the weakest hands in crypto, right? If I'm in a bullish position, I think bearish. I want to get out before the trade turns against me. And that goes for a macro view as well. So I'm macro bullish on the entire crypto economy, but the returns that we're seeing are not sustainable on a long-term scale. So it could be months, it could be years, nobody really knows. But I am looking for the first opportunity to turn bear and get out. Could be.
Yeah, I think it was Ari Paul or somebody like that was like, don't expect whatever 17, 18x Bitcoin multiple years in a row, because if you extrapolate that out, it becomes more money than is feasibly possible to enter the system.
It beats the entire world.
Eventually, the bearish, so the bearish momentum goes away at some point. And then the question is, does this create a stabilization effect or does it create a bust? So you're essentially trying to prepare yourself to be able to extract as much fiat as possible once the market shows that it's done growing at that moment. Right.
And I think it's pretty safe to say that most of us are all of us that do manage to get out, we're all going to take a scalp off the top, right? It's very unlikely that anyone's going to be able to call the exact top and get out at their all-time high.
So whatever your, let's say someone's got $1,000, that's their high. Like, they shouldn't expect to get $1,000 out of the system. Like, they, even if they do a good job of exiting at the right time, they're probably not going to get more than $750, $800.
Exactly.
So if you're looking at this ecosystem and trying to get that top, good luck. If you do it, I'll be really impressed. do you think there's a strong possibility of a stabilization effect where the log scale breaks or whatever you like the Peter Brandt chart or the parabolic trav chart, whoever you want to choose for your parabola measure, once it really does break, do you think we'll see a significant crash? So where Bitcoin goes from whatever price it is, let's say it hits 30 grand, do you think we're going to see like $5,000 Bitcoin, or do you think we could see stabilization because adoption of blockchain is high, like the technology is still growing, but this speculative trading component is less attractive?
It's so hard to tell. Absolutely, I think there will be some kind of significant crash at some point in time. Who knows when that'll be. As far as how far it will crash, I would imagine we're looking at a greater than 50% crash at some point. Putting a numerical value on that is really dependent on how high we go before it occurs. I know already Bitcoin sees 30 to 40% retracements on a regular basis. So maybe a 50% crash is somewhat optimistic. Maybe it's even more.
as conservative.
Right. But when you look at the dot-com bubble, and I know some people hate the comparison to the dot-com bubble, but absolutely things crashed pretty significantly. And it took years for it to recover. But where we are now, you know, if you take a look at where the NASDAQ is now compared to where it was at the peak of the dot-com bubble, the peak of the dot-com bubble looks pretty small. So long-term, I think there's an absolute place for crypto. I think it is a new asset class. Medium-term, I do expect us to have some kind of significant crash at some point, and I just hope that I have the foresight and hope, you know, a lot of people have the foresight to be able to get out before that occurs and take advantage of it.
Yeah. Right now there's this parabola, and it's really only visible. This curve is really only visible in log anyway. So if you look at it not in a log scale, it just looks like this vertical wall. But when you look at it in a log scale, you can see the bear market from 2014 to 2015 where Bitcoin lost 80% or more of its value. But since then, we have not had anything greater than about a 50% drawdown. And that was pretty early on, too. In the past 2 years or so, really 25 to maybe like 45% was kind of the norm. And they were all pretty short term, like from peak to valley was never really more than like a month, maybe month and a week. Like with China in the summer of 2017 was a huge impetus for the bull run because it gave a lot of oversold momentum to be able to continue on. And the correction we're in right now really fits into that. How are you approaching a scenario like now where we're clearly in consolidation? We don't know when it's going to end, but you look at a daily view right now, like we've got a month of sideways with some that includes so far a 40% correction, and we're creating essentially, I look at it as a possible ascending triangle. How are you looking at your altcoin strategy versus your Bitcoin strategy? Do you think they can go up together? Do you think that at some point Bitcoin's going to break out and quickly chase to $30,000? How are you trying to address what we're going to see coming forward?
Yeah, so I think one thing I'm definitely looking for is for the cycles to continue to speed up. If we're going to continue to keep making new highs, these trends need to keep getting steeper and they need to keep getting faster. So faster and steeper until it becomes unsustainable. And that's when the big break, correction, crash, whatever you want to call it, will occur. Are we not only maintaining the trend, but is the trend continuing to get steeper and faster, I think is very key.
And in terms of how you'll play altcoins, or will you? Like, is there a point where Bitcoin is just moving so fast that you're just like, okay, I'm just hanging on to Bitcoin and riding that, and I'll sell directly to fiat? Or do you think altcoins will always play a part in your strategy?
Yeah, I think they'll always play a part. But, you know, generally we see that except for select runs for us to have a full on alt season, Bitcoin needs to be relatively stable. So as Bitcoin is moving up, we will sometimes see alts run with Bitcoin, but it's generally not the entire altcoin market. If Bitcoin is making a huge leg. So I'm kind of looking for that Bitcoin stability to continue to play altcoins. I will likely close all altcoin positions if Bitcoin starts to make its next big leg and monitor. You know, maybe I wind up putting my foot in my mouth and altcoins do run with Bitcoin. And if that's the case, I will definitely reverse my thinking and get into altcoins. But currently my thinking is take advantage of this while it lasts. I expect things to keep speeding up. So each of these alt seasons should continue to be shorter and occur faster. And, you know, Bitcoin is the king. Don't mess with the king.
Yeah. So let's look at it before we wrap up from a bear market perspective. Bitcoin was obviously super bullish, but I think you were still buying alts a little bit in the fall. Do you think that there's a scalp trade opportunity with altcoins for like these kind of return to the mean type of bets? And do you think you'll play those when Bitcoin moves higher velocity, or how are you going to approach that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can take a look at the last alt season when the majority of the season, which is, you know, when everything was moving up together at the same time, after that was over, we still saw select coins just running to crazy returns. OMG, Neo, ARK, those were some of the ones that really just made these extraordinary returns after a good portion of the season was already over. So I still expect, select coins to still have these large legs, and absolutely will try to take advantage of them. But in general, I will be a lot more selective, and I won't just have some big, you know, for me, 12 coin portfolio, right? For some people, 20 to 50 coin portfolio of altcoins, just assuming they're all going to go up.
Yeah, that was my mistake in the fall, is like I got into too many alts whenever Bitcoin would calm down. And when Bitcoin stopped calming down, I got stuck with some of those positions. But yeah, I agree. There will still be opportunities even when Bitcoin's high velocity. Do you think that will continue on, say, when Bitcoin breaks and we're in a straight up crypto bear market broadly? Are you going to be packing it up and going home, or are you going to stick around and see what you can make of it?
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin is king. Obviously, we haven't seen a true Bitcoin bear market since the 2013-2014 bubble. So I wasn't around, so I wasn't there to play it. But in general, my assumption is that if we see a significant greater than 50% Bitcoin drawdown, that it's going to bring down everything with it. I will be in full fiat when that occurs.
Okay, so you won't try to get cute with the drawdown.
Right, and full fiat, so not Tether. I think that's important.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how hard it is. I know we have a mutual friend that thinks it's going to be extremely difficult to get to fiat at all. So that'll be an interesting day whenever that happens. And I like getting different perspectives. You know, my last guest, Nick Pispie, like, he's pretty bullish generally. Like, he doesn't think it's going to be a run for the doors type of event. And it'll be really interesting to find out how that actually plays out. But we can certainly expect at some point, do you think, maybe you think it's in 2018, I don't know. At some point we can see some sort of true fear and panic as people think this money-making machine is going away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect it to be over a period of hours. It should be at least days that it would occur. So as far as being able to get your money out, as long as the exchanges stay up, I would imagine people will be able to get their money out. But, you know, we can't continue to increase in speed and momentum, continue to increase the velocity of the trend infinitely. It becomes unsustainable at a certain point. So I'm not going to try and call when it's going to stop, just that at some point in time, it unfortunately will have to make a significant correction before we can continue on.
I want to wrap up the show with some trading advice for the week. So if you had one piece of advice that you'd give, let's say a intermediate trader, you know, somebody that's in Bitcoin, they're in altcoins, but they're working on their strategies overall, what kind of advice would you give them today?
Yeah, you know, from a fundamental perspective, something I see amongst a lot of new traders and I would like people to try and avoid is getting caught up in, you know, what I always call marrying these coins. I'm a full believer that 90% of what out there today has no utility value today. This is all speculative mm-hmm. value. And what I mean by that is speculative value is the assumption that there will be utility value at some point in the future. But today, there's very little utility value. So you see people get caught up in, oh my God, Tron is the next one. Cardano is the next one.
I've never gotten caught up in a bag. I don't know what you're talking about. I do not. I definitely don't have a picture of the Ubic chart with a big green rocket on it right now.
Right. So absolutely make money on these coins when there's a mania, like there's been recently with Cardano and Tron, etc. Make money on it. Just don't get married to them. If you buy the top and it starts going against you, cut it loose. Don't bring it all the way back down. That would be my biggest piece of advice for new traders.
When the volatility is so big, how do you know when to cut it loose? Like, that's one of the things I have a hard time with personally with when I set stops. Sometimes by the time I reach the limit of my holding capacity on a successful trade. So let's say I've pulled 3 or 4x on an altcoin trade and I'm pretty happy with it. Well, sometimes those need to return to the mean. Like for me, sometimes that'll be like the daily Kijun. And I have a hard time at times saying, okay, well, I'm going to sell this up here where it looks overextended and I'll wait until it hits the daily Kijun. You know, like I feel like crap, tomorrow's daily is going to prove me wrong. You know, and some of these swings, even short term, can be so drastic. Is there anything special that you do to try to secure those wins, but also not miss continuation of the move?
Yeah, I don't think there's a silver bullet. It comes with experience. You know, watch volume, watch your patterns, look for those 3 to 4 legs to form. Some people in crypto will absolutely hate that I'm saying this, but don't be afraid to take profit. If you just held on to something that went 4 or 5x and you take profit and it goes on to 8 or 10x, you really can't be that upset about that. You just nailed 4 to 5x, which is unheard of in any other asset class. The fact that you missed the 10x is, you know, that sucks, but how do you know you would have sold at 10x? Maybe you would have held it all the way back down. So don't be afraid to take profit. Try to look for basic signs, volume, patterns, etc. And experience, you know, you just have to get experience in the markets.
Yeah, and some of these will exceed your expectations no matter what you do. I XLM or Stellar Lumens is another example of one. Maybe, I don't know if you foresaw this, I certainly did not. But when you draw it out, like not only did it reach its previous all-time high, it reached like well beyond that into this. I drew a ridiculous trend line. I can share that. I think I did a tweet where I shared how obvious it must have been. But it's this absurd trade, you know, like, and it'll go beyond your expectations, but like you can't be upset with yourself about missing some of that. And even when you look at that one, you can get the big part of the move. Let's say you sell at the prior all-time high, even on a position like Stellar. One, it's back, it came back to that prior all-time high anyway, so it drew down all the way back down to that. But the top, the very top, if you caught the very top, is a 2x from the prior all-time high. So if your target was, okay, which already this is an extremely aggressive target for Stellar. So you say, I'm selling no matter what once it hits the prior all-time high because that was a ludicrous price anyway, and I'm making great profit. And then it runs 2x beyond that. Well, sure, you didn't catch that, but you could have caught one of many other coins that were also extremely bullish, and the 2x was less risky than the continuation from whatever this was, like an 8x to a 16x or whatever that last double included. And that's something that I've been trying to take to heart myself. So I guess I'll make that my trading tip, is you don't have to have a 10x. Like you can roll a 5x into a 2x and it's the same thing. That's another lesson that I guess Crypto Messiah has been trying to preach to people, because there's a lot of people like holding on desperately to these moves, looking for every ounce, you know, like really squeezing every bit of juice out of them that they can. And that's not really necessary when there's almost seemingly is always another pump down the road.
Yeah, completely agree. I think that's great advice. You know, risk reward is a great way to put it. You nailed it. There's no reason to stay in these coins that have already made these ridiculous returns in the hope that you might get a little bit more out of it, that you might not nail the exact top. Take the ridiculous returns, find the next rocket to ride, and leave that one for somebody else to get caught in.
Cool. I think we can end it there. Although I can't wait to search Twitter and try to find somebody calling cup and handle on this Stellar move.
It's pretty clear cup and handle. I don't know what you're talking about.
Johnny, how can people keep track of what you're doing, the trades you're making, and that kind of stuff?
You guys can follow me on Twitter at Johnny Moe. It's JONNYMOE. I'm generally posting as much as I can.
Johnny Moe Trades.
Oh, excuse me. You're right. Johnny Moe Trades.
You don't know your handle.
Yeah, it used to be an underscore, and I finally traded it to Trades because somebody else has stolen my handle. So thank you. Yeah, Johnny Moe Trades is the handle. And I try to post as much as I can. You know, if I'm in a trade, as soon as I enter it, I try to get a screenshot of the charts and a call out to my Twitter followers as quickly as I can. And I try to be as transparent as I can. If I lost, if I won, if it was a bad trade, you know, call me out on it. I will not hesitate to own it.
Nice, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. You're one of my favorite traders out there. I found you when I first got into crypto searching cash tags, actually. So you're like one of the first people I followed because you weren't posting garbage. You were posting a chart and being clear and helpful. And I really appreciated that. So it's been a pleasure getting to know you over these months and look forward to seeing you continue to succeed with your crypto journey.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's glad you got something out of it. Hope other people get something out of it. And that should show how much better you are at Twitter than I am, right? But I think you've 10x'd my followers and you started after me. So well done.
Yeah, I might not have 10x'd my Bitcoin yet, but my Twitter game has been on point so far for some reason. So, all right. Appreciate it, everybody listening, and we will catch you next time. And I think next time we'll have Josh back for a normal episode of LedgerCast. So we'll see you then.
Thanks.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry in a house of cards.